It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
We are all here today, the triumvirate, because there's just too much to say for only one or two people to have it go down that way, because you know, it's just busy out there. Actually, Roger was just saying right before we came on that it seems to be kind of a busy season for news and that kind of thing. Yeah, pretty much these shows write themselves now. You just look around at what's going on. It doesn't require a lot of creativity, just observation.
Definitely no shortage of content.
Nope, and observating we have been, as they say. So I can't even tell you what we're going to talk about today because there's so much of it. But if you don't like what we're talking about, my suggestion is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and you tell us what you want to talk about, and we will kindly oblige. So remember, you always have editorial control at your fingertips. Now, let's see, how do we put this? Well, first off, welcome back to all of the regulars, and if you're new to the show because you just happened on it or somebody told you about it, please try to stay the whole hour. It is virtually a guarantee that you'll learn something that you didn't know. And also remember, anybody's thinking of calling in and asking a question or making an observation, there are no dumb questions. If there's something you don't know but interests you, I promise you there are other people out there that don't know it, and it will interest them too. We don't bite ever, but should you be a little shy, you can always reach us at info@strivuswealth.com, and we will get the email and address it on air if we have time right now, or otherwise we'll get an answer by next week. Or if you'd like a personal response, that's another way to do it. I also remind everybody that we have a one-hour consultation free for the asking. Just go to the website, which is
www.strivuswealth.com. It's STRIVUS.
I'm just thinking there's a phone thing here, but my computer screen isn't telling me who it is.
That's so all right. We can just pick it up.
Good morning. Whoever you are, could I get your name, please?
Whoever I am, I'm Bob.
I know this voice.
Oh, hey, Bob.
Yes.
For
yes.
Some reason, I got an error screen on my computer, so it's not.
Yeah, I was going to try to call you after you did the part. After you did the market wrap, but he put me right through.
That's okay.
So it's not an emergency, but he treated it as such. But
you're an emergency.
I'm an emergent thing. So I wanted to ask your guys your opinion on the whole Jerome Powell situation and the interest rates. The interest rates have put a kibosh on a lot of the business, particularly in real estate. So just wanted to get your guys' take on it, what you think. And you can do it after the market wrap. I can hang up and listen. It's up to you guys. I didn't want to disturb your flow.
Well, no, I got a question for you. How much time have you got?
I've got the full hour.
Good, because if we're going to talk about Powell, you're going to need it.
Yeah,
we could make it the topic of today. So
let's use the segment while you're on.
Go ahead.
Let's use the segment while you're on and we're talking, which is what talk radio is all about, after all. To do that, okay. We'll just pick up the market wrap after I do the trivia question after the first break.
This was actually, I had at least one paragraph about this in my market wrap, so it's very fitting.
So it works right in.
Yeah.
All right, first question to everybody here, up or down on Powell as Fed chairman?
I mean, honestly, over his tenure, up.
Joey?
I would say sideways thumb. If he does not cut rates this next month, I think I'll be revisiting.
Yeah, your thumb will be dragged down.
Yeah, but historically good.
And Bob, what's your up or down?
Mine, I think overall he's done a good job. He had to migrate through the remnants of COVID. He's done a good job. I'm thinking though that he misread the. Maybe it's too early to take the pulse check on the tariffs and inflation. However, that inflationary cost will be passed on to the consumer. But Trump's been able to get people to negotiate and accept some of our goods, which opens up the opposite stream of money overseas, where it's been a one-way tunnel in some cases, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm not sure if he misread the tariff effect on inflation or whether it's too early. And that's another thing, you know, another one of my questions. So I think overall, you know, Trump is a businessman, and it's nice to have somebody in the White House that is a businessman that knows how to negotiate rather than just rolling over on their back and waiting to be brushed so like a dog. So
my opinion, it's very similar to Adams. I think he's been the best Fed chairman of my lifetime. My problem with that is the tallest midget theory.
Well, he can ruin his legacy if he doesn't act soon. I agree with Joey that my opinion would definitely change if he goes too long without at least doing a quarter point drop.
And I will tell you what my opinion about that opinion is. A, you're right, because B, my opinion is if he doesn't do it this time, it has changed from common sense and economics to 100% personal.
Yeah, I think you can start to make that argument a lot stronger.
I agree, but I also think that there is not, I mean, it's not like overwhelming, compelling need to do a rate cut right now. It just makes sense to do a rate cut right now.
How about this part of it? One of the things he fears is inflation produced by tariffs. The Fed has zero influence on what the tariffs produce on the price line. If the tariffs come in, it might bump some prices up one time until the tariff is reduced and they come back down. I don't care if your interest rate is 1 or 10. That will not change by one penny.
Yeah,
he is totally not to be involved in tariff discussions, and yet he's using it as the driver, which I believe is a smokescreen for his hatred of Trump. That's my opinion.
Yeah, fair enough. You can have this argument that do the input prices to goods and services, is that what drives inflation, or is inflation a monetary supply issue?
Inflation is and has always been and will always be a monetary phenomenon. Milton Friedman, and it's correct because if Milton Friedman said it, it's guaranteed correct.
Okay.
By me. He can't speak for himself anymore, so I took it over. Yeah, I agree with that. He's looking at things that he can't control, and it's altering his behavior.
Perhaps.
And that's the part I disagree with. Other than that, I agree with all you guys that say, yes, he has been doing a very adequate job for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. It's just lately. Mm-hmm. And he can make it up, but don't make it up with a half a point change.
Right.
I make it up with increments that happen more frequently.
Yep.
We got to take a quick break. Bob, if you want to hold over, that's fine. We'll pick this up on the other side. But right now, we'll take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we're interrupting the format of this show a little bit from normal, but nothing wrong with that. Stay flexible. Let's get Bob back on. Thanks for waiting.
Okay, so Adam, you're saying that you think it will ruin his legacy unless he goes and drops a quarter point.
I think the potential is there to ruin his legacy, yes.
Yeah. Do you think that'll happen in the fall or the winter? Or?
I mean, if I had to place a bet, I think he's going to drop at this next meeting. I could be wrong. It's either stay the same or drop. There's no rate hike on the table, but I would err towards dropping on or guessing that he would drop on this next meeting. But
Trump is more or less daring him not to.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you do then?
Well, he did back off the rhetoric of firing him this week, which I think Bessent probably sat him down and talked to him.
Right. But I don't think his having him on TV with the hard hat on and talking about cost overruns, he's not really responsible for managing the cost overruns of the Fed.
No,
of the redo.
So I mean, ultimately, he's the chair, so everything does fall on him. But I understand what you're saying.
The Fed's got the biggest building department, or the U.S. government does. So it's the biggest
I'm thinking services. Maybe by next spring, rates may be a total of a half a point lower, and because he's going to have to jump start real estate because it's not moving.
Yeah, and that's where Trump is coming from. Yeah, well, Trump's coming from two places, I think. One is he's a real estate guy. They always want lower rates.
Right.
The second is we have to continuously refinance our debt. And every time we do that at higher rates, it costs us a fortune to the point where we're at a situation right now that if we keep going like we are, servicing the interest on the national debt will become the biggest line item for the federal government, bigger than any other single line item, including Social Security and Medicare. So
it's already a trillion.
I agree 100% with that. Plus, you know, then you've got the opposite of that. The people in investment banking want rates to be where they're at now. They don't want them lower because they think it's going to spark inflation. So there's a bunch of different plays. You could put it in a pie, and there's a bunch of different segments working for and against one another. That's a lot to consider.
Definitely. We talk every time there's a rate movement, we talk about how there's winners and losers from that, and that's always going to be the case. We were just talking about that over the break. There's always, if you're a lender, high rates are great. If you're a borrower, high rates are terrible.
Right. Yeah.
The other thing that's pervasive throughout society in general, but particularly the media and some of the politicians, some people confuse the Fed with a body that can change the mortgage rate. They can influence the mortgage rate with their direction of short-term policy, but they cannot change the mortgage rate. The market sets the mortgage rate. And
I'll hang up and listen to your market wrap. I think I've delayed you guys long enough, but thank you for
this was kind of exciting. You know, we never want to be called rigid and unmovable, so we appreciate the call. Thanks.
We appreciate you guys, too. Thanks you so much. Have a blessed week.
You too.
Take care, Bob.
Bye-bye. To say that a different way, it's not – I mean, most of the time, if you lower short-time rates, you've started a ripple effect that ends up lowering the 10-year rate.
That's what I mean. That can influence.
Right. But it's not 100% correlation. As we've seen in the past, right? So sometimes you can lower the short-term rate, and because there's 50 other variables influencing the 10-year, the 10-year still
market
goes up.
Market expectations. Exactly. Tell you what, let's slip in a trivia question so that we have...
Hold on. Last thing on this topic.
Okay, sure.
Here's what the market thinks. The market is pricing in 1 to 2 cuts this year and 2 to 4 cuts next year, and I think that seems appropriate.
Yep.
I'm not so sure on the next year, but maybe.
Well, next year is always going to have less clarity than this year.
Been all in on.
But I could make a case where that seems very reasonable.
Yeah, then we have to go looking for ways to make money on cash again.
Yeah, which is...
Meaning we up the risk profile for us and for all of our clients, which we really seriously don't want to.
That's right, and I can buy a beach house and pay you guys less in mortgage-backed securities dividends for your portfolio.
Uh-huh. All right, well, let's do the trivia question, brought to you as usual by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. I just talked to Paul yesterday, actually. You can call him at 904-636-7888. Let's do this one. You know, our current bull market just passed 1,000 days.
It did.
That's pretty cool, isn't it? And I expect it to go a little longer. No one ever knows for sure. But anyway, the longest bull market in history ended on the watch of Bill Clinton. I don't know how many people remember that. How many days long was that one? I got a little range of plus or minus 25 days.
Yeah, and if you get that one, how much was the return?
And I'll tell you, if the average bull market runs about over 1,000, 1,015, 1,017, something like that, think a little big because the average means a whole bunch of them that are longer. So this is not a trivial number. And then because I always promise that we do trivia with a point, I'm going to give this out a little bit early, maybe 2 minutes to go on the show, because I want to talk about the policies behind it and the conditions on the ground. So if you want to take a shot, do it quickly. I gave the question late. I'm going to cut it off early. So pick up the phones.
All right.
All right, carry on.
Yeah, so it was a really nice week in the market. The returns came in between 1 and 1.5%. The NASDAQ actually was the lowest at 1%, and the S&P was the highest at 1.5%. The Dow gained 1.3%, and I am not seeing much red on my screen anymore for the. There's nothing negative for the week, the month, the quarter, or the year to date.
Unlike you, I still have one red number on here, but it has nothing to do with today.
There is one red number. Yep. It is the Dow has not. It is a quarter point off its all-time high.
And boy, did it scare it this
week. So close.
Oh, man, I thought, this is it. They're going to do it.
The difference is about 113 points on the Dow. So
other than that, I thought my red cartridge ran out this morning.
Yeah, pretty solid performance. International markets also continued their run up this week. The All World Index was up almost 2%. Developed world markets were up 2.5%, while emerging markets were up 0.9%. And China, once again, posted pretty solid gains of 1.5%, continuing their recent run despite their horrible economic data. So good news, more or less, there.
Yeah.
The tech sector has really been on a run lately, despite a little bit of underperformance this week. It now makes up 33.6% of the S&P 500. It was like 22, not that long ago. It's just outperformance. Really, really strong. You have to remember, though, that in 2018, they changed the way the S&P sectors were classified, and they removed stocks like Google and Meta from the tech sector. So that actually brought the weighting down. If you put those back in, the weighting would be 45% of the S&P 500 today.
Wow.
Pretty incredible.
Yes, it is. But, you know, look at the country. Look at the world. Making stampings like we used to, that's just kind of not what people aspire to nowadays.
No. Yeah. Well, it's also very capital intensive and labor intensive. And it's very hard. You couldn't make margins like you can in the tech industry in a business like that. It's not possible.
Right. And what is manufacturing now as a part of our GDP? It's like 18%.
Yeah,
very tiny.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes
sense. The actual employment doesn't vary that much as things, you know, we make more and more stuff. But as a percentage, it's just being left behind.
Definitely. One thing to look out for when the market gets hot like this is highly speculative stocks. These are stocks with really high short interest in them. That means that there's a lot of people out there betting that the stocks will go down. But when the market is in a risk-on mode, those stocks tend to get bought up pretty quickly. Some people call that a meme stock. You remember GameStop from a few years ago, 2020 and 2021. Things that was the most shorted stock at the time, I believe, was GameStop. And so people went in and bought it and drove the price up. And man, it actually caused one firm to go out of business, I believe. But since the low on April 8th, the top 100 most shorted stocks are up 79% versus the market being up 28%. And so does anyone want to take a guess how this story ends?
Yeah, something that rhymes with short squeeze.
Yeah. Yeah. So just be careful. Don't get caught up in the hype because you might make some money in the short term. But when the bottom falls out, it's going to fall out hard.
I was thinking about that when I was prepping this morning. If somebody were to ask a question, well, how much can you lose? How much money can you lose shorting stocks? My question right back would be, how much money have you got?
Yeah,
because exactly. That's the answer.
It's true.
Before you start borrowing.
On the good news side, earnings season continues to roll on with over 300 companies now having reported. So far, so good. 71.5% beating on earnings, 67% beating on revenues, and 3% more companies are raising earning targets versus lowering. So really good start to earnings season.
It's the best number of that whole report.
Yeah, it's really excellent. So
people are not ashamed or afraid anymore to say, I think we're going to raise revenues.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we do have to frame this because going into the season with the tariffs and everyone was lowering expectations. If we didn't see a really good earnings season this time around, we could be in some real trouble.
Yeah. That's true.
And also a lot of people pulled their guidance, are now reissuing. So there's more going on than just the top line numbers, but I will say that the top line numbers look pretty good.
Yeah, in the next 2 weeks, the earnings reporting is going to be hot and heavy.
Yep.
That's when something like, 2,000
the bulk,
a week.
Yeah, it's a
crazy
ton.
Number like that. So by next week, we're going to have a much better overview of what the earnings season is really shaping up to be. And there'll be some of that for guidance, too.
Yeah, the big winners were custodians, investment custodians. They really benefited from increased trading during the tariff stuff.
Yeah.
Every one of them beat their numbers.
We're getting some calls we'll have to take after the break.
We only got about 20 seconds.
Quick congratulations to my niece who just got accepted to UNF.
Oh, yes. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Cool. Way to go, Elsa. That's great. And also a quick RIP to Terry Jean Bollea. A very sad loss. You probably know him as Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
I miss him. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
Yes, and we have, is there anything else you want to say before we pick up a couple phone calls? All right, we're going to go, we've got Pat who wants to talk trivia. Good morning, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent. How about you?
Just fine. Want to let you know I got my black belt.
Hey, nice. Good. Yeah, we'll try to stay a distance away, or if we can at least be in range of sight and sound, we'll be nice.
Yeah, tell Lane he's on notice.
you don't need me to do that.
Trivia question. I have a wild guess.
Huh?
3,452 days.
Well, that's wild, but it's short.
It is short.
Yeah.
So we've set the bottom to it, haven't we?
Yes. You have created a range that goes from 3,453 to infinity.
Well, not infinity.
Wow.
Hasn't been that many.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty impressive, but don't turn the program off until the last couple minutes because I'm doing the Paul Harvey thing today with the rest of the story.
Page two.
Thanks. Have a good weekend, Pat.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Okay, you too. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
And then, good morning, George.
Good morning.
What's happening?
I recently established a ladder of CDs. And three beneficiaries on each of the CDs.
Okay. Good.
I got concerned about the FDIC insurance since I was over the 250. The bank tells me that I have nothing to worry about because the 250 is established for each beneficiary.
For each beneficiary. Yeah.
Is that correct?
Our understanding is that it's for each CD, not for each beneficiary.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I've never heard that before. I can't say off, like, I truly don't know if that's true or not, but I've never heard it framed that way.
Agreed. That doesn't sound like what we understand the rules to be, but we're not 100% certain.
Yeah, well, we will do some research this week because I'm not sure either. My intuition would say, yeah, that probably is good enough to qualify, but do not ever rely on my intuition. If I tell you I absolutely know something, you can pretty much take that to the bank.
Quick question, George, are these CDs held in a trust?
No.
Okay, because I did do a quick Google search, mm-hmm. and it does look like that would apply if they were in a trust, but outside the trust, it's per depositor, per bank.
Now, that's interesting.
Yeah, I just figured at the bank should know what they were talking about. So.
You know what? If I trusted everything,
that's not the way I ever. Nope. I'm sorry.
If I trusted everything a banker ever told me, I wouldn't be sitting here today. I'd be out panhandling pennies. That's the truth.
Okay. Well, I'll wait till you do some investigating and listen on next week.
We'll try to get you a definitive answer.
Yeah, I need to do some more research on that. Yep. But
and before you go, would you like to take a shot at the trivia?
I'll say 5,000.
That was a great guess for one reason. It's a little bit high, and now we have a real bracket. So you just did a favor for the next callers.
Okay.
We'll address this next week, and we do appreciate the call. Enjoy this glorious day.
Thank you.
Isn't it nice out there? kind of funny because the whole family was sitting around in their respective homes last night, and Sarah's sister from California texted us, is it really 106 out there? And I said, well, I just took a walk at the heat of the day at 4 o'clock, and it was just beautiful. Adam said, I just came in from a bike ride, and it was just beautiful. So,
really? Well, it wasn't. I was barely sweating. We rode for 40 minutes. It was nowhere near 106.
No, it was. And as soon as I turned the first corner on my walk, I got the ocean breeze, and it was even nicer.
Yeah.
And we're not that close to the ocean. But anyway, it's kind of funny because I think I've always thought that summer in Northeast Florida was a well-kept secret. The problem is the secret isn't well enough kept.
Not anymore, that's for sure. It's hot here. Don't get us wrong.
Oh, it is. Absolutely.
It's not unbearable most of the time.
No treat in New York.
No. I think the hottest summer I ever spent was in either Cincinnati or Kansas City, though.
The hottest day, the hottest night we've ever spent that I can think of was in the middle of Lake Michigan at the Grand Hotel. And I'll tell you, I don't care where you've been on this planet. If you can find a place more miserable than that was that night, you get the booby prize. After we left, they air conditioned it. I wonder why. Anyway, I digress. Where should we go? I got a couple of things to explore with the young guys. Let's do one of these first. Here is a real bombshell report. According to Investopedia, which, by the way, is a website I absolutely love, Americans are losing confidence in Social Security. Can you imagine that?
No. I wonder why.
I don't know. Let's see. By my watch, 2034 is in about 3 months, isn't it? In terms of Congress and all that stuff. It is unbelievable. They will not do anything until they're forced to.
Well, you can't blame them. Look what happened to the last guy that tried to do something about it.
That's always a problem. I can't disagree with that. Or as was it? I can't remember who it was, but somebody. Oh, I remember. Ben Stein's dad said anything that's unsustainable will stop.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing to feed Social Security is currently unsustainable. And unfortunately, politically, anything that's done to fix it causes politicians to lose their jobs. And unfortunately, doing nothing just keeps shortening the horizon, but they're not willing to do nothing. They keep doing something, adding benefits and so on, so they keep accelerating
the date. They just voted to add benefit, that undo the pension thing where...
Yeah, but you get paid for time that you didn't put into Social Security.
Right. It doesn't make any sense.
We were railing against it about 2 years ago, probably, when they first started talking about it. And now it got done. And now they're paying the extra benefits. And they just did another wipeout move on Social Security. I can't believe it, folks. I just can't believe it. 68 million people on it right now. And by 2035, which is outside time for when benefits will be cut in the absence of action, 82 million recipients estimated.
Wow.
Now, if you get 82 million people and cut their benefits overnight, you haven't even seen a March on Washington ever in your life.
I mean, that one. Yeah.
And it would not be for the purpose of a peaceful demonstration,
no,
I promise you.
No, definitely not.
Get all the gray-haired wheelchair people out there. And I'd be among them.
They can't even, I mean, they can't, no one has even the courage to stand up and do things that are easy like Reagan did. Like, just delay it for people that are nowhere near Social Security age.
It's all actuarial.
It is.
So, ask the actuaries how to fix it.
Do you think a 14-year-old right now cares if their retirement date gets moved back to age 70 or 72? No, they're not thinking about that.
Now, I brought this subject up because of this next little thing. The U.S. fertility rate dropped to an all-time low last year with fewer than, you ready for this? Sit down. Oh, you are sitting down. Well, the rest of you sit down. Fewer than 1.6 children born per woman last year.
Crazy.
2.2 is the approximate replacement rate? 1.6. Now, in 1957, the rate peaked at 3.8 births per woman. Now, how did we get to 1.6?
Well, the cost of everything skyrocketed.
Yeah, and how do you sustain Social Security?
And
have a lot of, well, in 20 years, I can tell you how, but in between, I don't know.
Yeah, well, fortunately, we do have a big generation coming up, but there's some problems in between.
Yeah,
for sure. It's we're turning into Japan in a lot of ways, with the cost being so high that people just can't imagine having a kid.
Yeah, this, of course, ties right back to the discussion on Powell. Somehow, our monetary policy in the country has to be brought into some kind of focus where we do something about the housing problem.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked in the past about how the average home buyer age has gone way up.
Yes.
All of these are factors in influencing young families and deciding how big they want to get.
Yes, and how do people build wealth in this country starting young? They buy houses.
Yeah.
That's one of the best long-term wealth builders we have, and they can't afford them now.
Yeah.
And that's because of the shortage. You know what the other thing would be if we could build more places and get people to buy them? Rents would come down.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's so many moving parts to this thing, and nobody really has any kind of plan except Kamala Harris had one. And we're just going to build 5 million houses. Define we.
Real quick, I think there's two other things, too. One of them is, you know, we've been told on the radio, like younger people, people under 35, that we're going to be the first generation not to do better than their parents.
Right.
And with that comes a pessimism. I mean, that's really the thing, too, is there's just not the sense of, we're going to do better than our parents, so we should have kids we're not sure we can afford yet. People are not. They want to make sure they can afford it before they have it.
So it's all tied in, this 1.6 average kids per woman, the whole thing. We need a better outlook. You know, things in the short term are looking pretty good, but our outlook is not looking rosy.
It's true.
Unless we take some of the fundamental flaws in the way it's set up now. Do I have actual concrete answers? No, I do not. But I'm looking around, as these guys will, and we'll keep talking about it. All right, we got to take one last quick break, and we'll be right back and finish up some other cool topics. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
All right, we do have the trivia question out there. How long in days was the longest bull market on record? It is above 3,452, but it is below 5,000. So you've got sort of a little window in there if you want to take a shot. All right, last week I mentioned that I wanted to start talking about discussing the concept of crypto. And I decided not to do it last week because I knew Joey would be here this week. Now, Joey is in his 30s and Adam is pushing 50. He'd rather I say 40s. And I'm 75, so I think you're going to find that the attitude about the whole crypto concept is very dependent on age. And that's a theory of mine. I haven't proven it. So I'm going to start it out with my part. Who was it? Somebody. Oh, yeah. This one. House Majority Whip Tom Emmer. Crypto legislation proves anti-crypto dinosaurs are going extinct. Well,
I saw the headline and I thought of you.
I'm calling myself the Stevosaurus, and I don't plan to go extinct. I am an anti-crypto dinosaur. Talk me out of it.
Adam
tried last week, and he did make a dent.
Well, we were talking about stablecoins specifically, and I think that is a concept you could probably get behind because of the backing of a treasury.
The fully funded.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Joey.
I don't mean to blow up this conversation, but I'm definitely not an evangelist for crypto.
He's not at all.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm probably not representative of my generation in that way.
Okay.
The only reason that I own any is because when we were messing with software, there was a particular way to put it in a particular account that there were some compelling statistics for it for that case.
And so, it's worked really well.
It's worked really well, but it could blow up in a day.
Yeah, right? It really
could. It's just one of those things that's like, it doesn't even matter conceptually what it is. It could be tulips, literally tulips. Mm-hmm. And if the statistics said that, we just wanted to try it as a pilot before we would ever introduce it to clients.
Yeah.
I was willing to do it with my money.
My ancestors in the Netherlands did the tulip thing. That's why they moved to America. They were broke. All right. Let's talk. If you're going to talk crypto, you really got to talk about two different things. You got to talk about the Bitcoin, Ethereum type, and then there's the stablecoin and subdividing stablecoin. It's fully collateralized and not fully collateralized. What Adam was talking about last week, which is what the government is getting in on now, and I don't mean they're issuing one because they shouldn't.
No, they passed that other bill that said the Fed cannot.
Cannot, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially the Fed.
Yeah.
The U.S. Treasury shouldn't be able to either.
I don't think that bill covered that, but I don't think they have any intention to at this point.
Scott Bessent will not do it.
Yeah.
That guy, Sarah doesn't follow all this stuff in D.C. and all that macro stuff nearly as closely as I do. And her comment on him is he's just so competent.
Yeah.
He looks right. He talks right. He says the right things.
He's very calm.
That was my reaction, yeah, too. I said he doesn't raise his voice, and yet he carries the biggest stick.
Yeah.
And it's because he knows everything, and he knows everybody.
I think people trust him, including our president.
Yes, agreed. I've been blown away. So I told her the other night we were watching him. I said, now just think about this picture. Let's replace this guy with, say, Janet Yellen.
your favorite of all time.
Yes. Yeah. And you can't help but laugh. It's that ridiculous. Anyway, I'm really glad about that. You know, China one day canceled, they just unlegalized any form of crypto except theirs. The Chinese government made one. I don't want to see that happen here.
Yeah.
But I digress. Back to the stablecoin that they were talking about. Adam said that one is going to be 100% collateralized by dollars. And I said, okay, then why do you need it? I got dollars. I don't need crypto. But the answer to that, I gather, is that people doing transactions in other countries who do not have dollars in their pocket nor in their bank, they can do a transaction on stablecoin knowing it's fully backed by dollars. That I thought was a very good argument.
Yeah, it is. I just anecdotally, I go to Costa Rica frequently, and just a few years ago, I still was sending international wires down to Costa Rica to rent a house, and it's incredibly insecure. I did not enjoy that process at all. You get one number wrong on your routing, and who knows where that money goes? You can't get it back. It was just a terrible system, and I was asking, like, why do you still do it this way? And the answer was basically, this is the only way that we can do it. There's no other way to do it. Well, okay, this could change that and make it very secure and immediate. So there's no intermediary banks, and it's you hit send, and then the other person gets it right away.
Nature abhors a vacuum. And if there's a vacuum in ways to do things like that, somebody's going to figure it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a topic I am an evangelist about, because to me, this is a cure for what we've seen in the 10-year recently. If we can get more and concerns about the reserve status of the American dollar internationally, mm-hmm, if we can make it easier and more technologically advantageous for people to use the dollar for transactions locally while they're abroad, then why wouldn't they use the dollar as opposed to everything else? One of the things this could do, it'll be interesting to see how it rolls out, but to me, this is kind of a bank profit killer, because right now, the way our ledger system works in the U.S., you need this third-party bank, multiple of them, to approve transactions. It takes a day or two for money to move. That's kind of frustrating. If stablecoins come out and there's tokenization behind these things and you have fully collateralized items with treasuries, it may get to the point that if a client calls us and says, hey, we need $15,000 from the portfolio, a tokenized security trades instantly. We instantly have stablecoin in the account. We can instantly send it to their bank account. 15 minutes later, they have $15,000. Right now, that's a 2 or 3 day process. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal, I think, for everybody.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But this is sort of an aside for what you're saying. My first rule out of my 10 absolute must-do rules for personal finance, never need a bank.
Yes.
Period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the corollary to that is you can use a bank. Be careful what you use it for.
Yeah.
And then the corollary to that is go talk to your credit union. You get better rates and you own it. And as our buddy Lane, who checks in with us quite frequently, says, who is fiduciary responsibility to at a big bank? Shareholders. Right. Who is a fiduciary responsibility to in a credit union? The owners. Every depositor is an owner. So it's you. Now, if that doesn't make you think enough to go to a credit union for your business, then you're not paying attention. All right, let's go back to the uncollateralized or partially collateralized stablecoin. One of them dropped something like 80% in 20 minutes.
Yeah, so like this new law makes that illegal. You can't do that anymore.
Okay.
I don't know when it goes into effect exactly, but it that will not be the case going forward.
Was this Tether?
Maybe. I don't know.
Tether.
Okay, so we're down to Bitcoin, Ethereum, et cetera. And I have been studying this, as Adam knows, for a long, long time. I can't wrap my brain around it. It's just not there.
It's really hard. I mean, I like you, cannot wrap my head around what it is or what it isn't. I do know that it has enough acceptance by the public at this point to have value. But I look at it as kind of like art, because art, a painting by itself is not worth $50 million. But if enough people agree that it's worth $50 million and several people are willing to pay that for it, that becomes the market value.
It's a commodity.
Yeah. I mean, Bitcoin to me is somewhat similar. It's there's enough people out there willing to pay $120,000 for this thing, that's the value. It just is.
I believe that a lot of people that went into it really honestly believed that they were going to get away with murder from a tax standpoint. I could be wrong.
Maybe.
It's possible.
I have more thoughts on this, but Steve, you called your 2 minute.
Yep.
So let's turn it back to the trivia.
All right. Well, the topic of Bitcoin, that kind of thing, is never going to go away. I just was kind of curious what having all of us here would be. All right. It was in March of 2000, if you remember, when the internet collapsed, the internet stocks collapsed. The NASDAQ had gone up to something like 5680, and then before you knew it, it was about 1200. The reason for that, Bill Clinton is the luckiest person who ever lived. When the internet started coming into people's houses in the 2000s, or in the 90s, I mean, and Clinton was in there, everybody was doing all kinds of business, and the economy was booming, and everybody was getting on board. And then a guy named Charles Schwab came into your house through the internet, and all of a sudden, every Tom, Dick, and Harry could trade stocks now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you suppose that did? Well, made people go into the Schwab and buy stocks. Well, what kind of stocks were they buying? They were buying dot-coms. But here's the rub. The dot-coms were making money rarely, if ever. What they were basing their pricing on was clicks.
Eyeballs, clicks, whatever you want to call it. Yep.
Visits to the website. And there were some very high-powered economics professors who wrote some very scholarly papers on why profit didn't matter anymore.
I had one at Emory who was on CNN all the time talking about this stuff.
And then, all of a sudden, they decided it did matter because of the term burn rate. When all of the venture capitalists put all their money in the dot-coms and the burn rate would tell you what day you're going broke, they did. They went broke. The whole thing collapsed, and Clinton didn't look so good anymore. So that's my point.
Anyway, what's
today's NASDAQ? They're making a boatload of money. So if you want to invest in NASDAQ, do it. Have